The wisdom of experts can change your life. As a co-chair at the University of Texas, you've attained this elite status from growing and evolving over the course of your coaching career.
In our Learning from Experts podcast, exclusively for the head coaches here at the University of Texas, we're going to accelerate that process. You'll hear from world-class coaches, sports psychologists, and successful people.
And occasionally, it's the wisdom that impacts other areas of your life, like your health or your marriage. But here's something really important to appreciate: timing. Hearing something at exactly the right time makes all the difference.
Sometimes it's repetition, hearing a concept multiple times until it resonates with you.
So buckle up. This week's Learning from the Experts is about to begin.
Hey coaches, John Mitchell here. So this week we're going to hear from our newest head coach here on the 40 Acres, Stein Metzger, who is the head coach of the newly formed women's beach volleyball team. Boy, does Stein have a great resume. And get this, he's already won 2 national championships in beach volleyball at UCLA. Clearly, he was head and shoulders above everybody else that could have possibly gotten this job. Another big win for CDC and the University of Texas. And so Texas is off and running on this new sport. In this interview, listen to why the University of Texas wanted to create a beach volleyball program. You also find it interesting to hear about the fact that the 20 seconds between points is the key to mastering the game of beach volleyball. You'll also learn the difference between beach volleyball and regular volleyball and the type of culture Stein is building within his team. And here's the essence of what you'll learn. Step back and just think about your own program. Remember when you first took over? All the things that you had to pull together. Hearing what Stein is going through as he starts his program should make you really appreciate where you are today. Hopefully that gives you a great sense of well-deserved satisfaction. So let's get rolling. Let's listen to Stein Metzger. And remember, as a coach here at the University of Texas, hey, you're living the dream. Stein, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Happy to be here.
So tell us how beach volleyball came into existence here at the University of Texas.
Well, that's probably a question for CDC and Jarrett, but my understanding is that they saw a real opportunity. I mean, everyone can see the following that the indoor team has. They wanted to start a new sport, and they thought that beach volleyball was something that they could be successful at right away. And that's my understanding of how it started.
Right, right. And how is beach volleyball different than regular volleyball, other than being played on beach or
yeah,
sand?
Yeah, well, the elements are a big deal. At the very baseline, there's 2 players as opposed to 6. And then there's the way it's played is we play 5 matches against 5 other pairs. So 10 players will play.
Right.
And the team that wins 3 out of 5 will win it. So there's a lot going on at the same time. In fact, we're about to leave for Long Beach for our first competitions, and they're going to be playing those all at once. So it's a little bit of controlled chaos because there are 5 pairs playing and only 3 coaches, and we're running around trying to help them best we can. And they're really on their own 2 feet, you know, figuring out they need to be coaches on the courts. There's no substitutions like there is an indoor. And I would say the thing that from the mental aspect of the sport, what's very different from indoor is you can't specialize in any skill.
Right.
Indoor, they're very specialized. You know that you're going to be the passer. You know that you'll be the setter. You know you're going to be the hitter or blocker. On the beach, your opponent actually makes the decision on what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're struggling when you're passing or you're struggling as a setter, your opponent's going to make you do it over and over and over again to try and attack that weakness.
Right, right. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's a really interesting like mindset shift where you need to be a jack of all trades in this sport. And it's great if you're an A plus in one of the skill sets, but you can't be weak in any of the skill sets.
Right. I tell you, there's a lot of difference. I mean, yeah, just as you absorb that, it's two players rather than six players, and what all that would entail is very enlightening. And so you come to the University of Texas, and in researching this, I was blown away by how accomplished you are. And so, if you will, tell our fellow coaches your background and your story.
I was born and raised in Honolulu, Hawaii, and just so happened to be in a microcosm of a great volleyball program. I was actually raised to play basketball. My dad played basketball at University of Virginia. He's from the East Coast. Met my mom, who was born in Hawaii. They decided to move there, and I just happened to go to the school where my dad taught, and they had a great volleyball program, and discovered it through my sister, really, who played. She's a few years older than me, and I just fell in love with the sport.
Right.
Left Hawaii, came to UCLA to play indoor volleyball collegiately at the NCAA level. Was lucky to have a great career there, had some great teammates there. We had a lot of success. And then parlayed it into a beach career. The beaches of Southern California is where the modern beach volleyball game was developed. So I did that for 14 years, and then it was time to figure something else out. I had no idea that I'd be coaching at the collegiate level. That wasn't in the plans at all. In fact, when I was playing, the sport didn't exist at the collegiate level. It was only 10 years ago that the NCAA picked it up, had about a 2-year probationary period, had to reach, it was either 50 or 60 institutions had to add the sport. That happened quickly in a couple of years, and it was just right place, right time. I was looking at a career in real estate sales, which isn't atypical for somebody coming out of a pro career. And realized, like, I just love athletics. I love development. I love sports. I love practice. I wanted to get back into it, and volunteered for the indoor team at UCLA. And then they said, "Hey, we're thinking about starting a beach volleyball team. And would you like to take it on?" I said, "Absolutely." Had a really rough start. We had only our indoor team playing. Over the course of a decade there, we were able to create a program that was one of the top few programs in the country and one of only two that have won national championships so far. So I felt really lucky to be in a great place where we could develop some amazing women. Had a great staff there. And when I got the call from Texas to see if I was interested, I just really loved developing and building a program. And I said, "Hey, most people don't get a chance to do it once. I might get a chance to do it twice here." And so I was real curious about it. And going through the process, I thought that this would be a great move and it'd be great for the sport of volleyball and my family. And we found ourselves here in Austin.
Wow, that is a great story. And so you won two national championships at UCLA.
Yes.
Pretty darn good. Pretty darn
Yeah.
good. You know,
Yeah,
I
I know
tell you.
some other coaches listening there will understand this, but I still feel like there's two more that were left on the table that I'd like to have back.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. You know, that's the beauty of being at the University of Texas. You know, we've got that mentality of we're going to be the best and we're going to go out and get the best. I mean, CDC personifies this, but you know, it permeates all the coaches, don't you think?
Oh, no question. Yeah, and I'm lucky enough to be on the coaches chat, and when they're celebrating each other, when they're getting these big wins, and just noticing like all the success that everyone's having, and it's just really a great group and something to live up to and learn from.
Right. You know, I tell you, it's been really interesting for me to watch like the evolution with Coach Sark and getting to know him, 3+ years ago, and watching that evolution of the program. Talk to me about how a program evolves, how you would anticipate the program evolving over the next 4 years? Because I know it doesn't all happen immediately, but talk about, the evolution and maybe a little of the culture you want to create and just how that all sort of comes together over maybe 4 years.
Yeah. Well, I have done this once before. Each team that you have and each person that you coach is different, right? So I'm still sorting it out, to be honest. And I've learned a lot from the first time going through this. We will be able to grow this program faster than I did the last one, just based on the fact that we have the resources and the sport is developed. There's a transfer portal. But really, there's a lot going on right now in terms of building a program because that we don't have facilities and we're creating facilities and we're in meetings and thinking and talking about all of that. And it's really easy to get distracted. And so right now, I've got a whiteboard in my office and things come and go all the time on the whiteboard. But at the top, there's three things that just try to keep me centered each day. And it's recruiting, training, and culture. And all three are circled, and I'm just trying to stay focused on all three of those. Recruiting is obvious. You got to have people coming in the door, and you got to have great personnel. Training is something that I think our staff does really well. And culture is that really important piece that we can either grow quickly and be great soon, or if it takes us too long to kind of find our culture and find our way, it's going to slow down the process. So that's something that we're paying really close attention to. And in fact, this call has been great because the last 48 hours or so, I've been thinking about just reliving the process that we had before and things that worked, things that didn't work, and where we'll continue to go as we grow this culture.
Right. Stein, that's interesting. I see the difference between, coming in and literally starting a program versus coming in and taking over an existing program, because with an existing program, obviously the program is in the ditch, and that's what got the last guy fired, and then you have to come in and evolve the players into your culture. Whereas when you're starting from scratch, you don't have all that baggage, but you have other baggage. Is that, you think that's true?
Yeah, that is true. And I never thought of it that way, but it is nice to come in with a clean slate and be able
Yeah.
to build it from the ground up.
Right. Well, referring to Coach Sark, I thought one of the things that was fascinating with him is when he comes in here, you may not have realized this, but we go through a 6-game losing streak, which is unheard of at the University of Texas. And so by November in that losing streak, he's like, we don't have a player-led team and we don't have player accountability. I mean, he saw that. Of course, November, there's not a lot you can do about it, but he saw that was the problem. And so in January, he's like, okay, I've got an idea how to radically change player accountability. And so he puts it in, and then the second year, way better. We go from a losing record to a winning record. And then the third year, as we reach the Final Four. And so it's interesting to watch that. But his point was, it takes a while to evolve this thing. And I remember, this is way before your time, getting to know Augie Garrido, our legendary baseball coach. And he said, boy, it takes a minimum of 5 years to put in a program. I mean, it really takes 5 years. Do you think it really takes that long today?
My hope is that it's faster, but of course it always takes longer than you want.
Right.
We have a combination of we have the opportunity to bring in a new group and have a fresh start. At the same time, they're all coming from different locations because they're all transfers, right? So they're not freshmen coming in not really knowing a program. So that's interesting as well, because they're coming in with their own mindsets and expectations of what a program might look like.
So are you saying that you're not really recruiting freshmen, that you're really recruiting transfers?
Well, the way the recruiting works is that you start talking to student athletes that just left their sophomore year. So if we were to rely on sophomores being juniors, and then they need to mature once they're in college and get a couple of years under their belt before they're really effective. They need to be sophomores, juniors, seniors. We're talking about 5 years before we're really competitive. So that's what we did at UCLA, and it took about that long. Now with the transfer portal, we're able to bring people in and start training them right away. And so in terms of having people to train and on boots on the ground, we're able to do that a lot quicker. Now that the culture piece, that's always going to take time. And so as we build that around this group, that's going to continue to create a safe environment for us. My goal when having a my culture that I would like to build, that I did my last spot, was building a cooperative place where people feel safe, psychologically safe, to trust each other and to really compete hard against each other and then walk away and be on the same team. So that's going to take a little time, because when people first show up from other programs, they're all sizing each other up a little bit, like, hey, where am I on the hierarchy? Because of course they naturally want to play higher up in the lineup, and then obviously they want to play rather than sit and watch. So it's interesting when they come in to see where everyone's at, and then we have to kind of build a program, build a community, as we build this culture.
So Steins, explain you the culture you want to create. What's it look like?
Well, it starts with people understanding each other. So empathy is really critical for me. In our sport, it's less. There's two components. There's a team component, because there's everyone there, and then there's also this really unique pair component, where it's like akin to a marriage, where you're really with somebody and only that person on a court 24/7, and you really got to learn what makes them tick and what might set them off. And so, as soon as we came in, we had them all take the Enneagram personality test. And through that, the idea is that, one, the athletes get a chance to learn more about themselves, what their needs are, what makes them tick, when they're not doing well, what they need from their partner or their coach. And then at the same time, they get to see that their partner may respond totally different to certain stimulus, to stress, and may need something totally different. So there's a really great anecdote about, I had a pair of twins at my last program, and they are identical twins, and yet their personalities were starkly different. They were complete opposites. And when they were under pressure, one would kind of zone in and get quiet and focused, and the other one would get really emotional and loud and big and try and play big. And they couldn't understand why the other person was responding completely different, even though they were twins and sisters their whole lives. And so that just made it really clear to me, like, hey, we really need to dive into the fact that each person is different and responds differently. And that's a good thing. You want some variety on your team. And when you can understand that on the court, and you can understand your partner, that's when you can be at your best in a pair.
I assume in your culture there's a big push for accountability, right?
Absolutely. In fact, sometimes I don't love that word, because then it's people kind of pointing at each other. In terms of accountability, I really try to build this self accountability. And this is from my experience as being a player. When I came in, I was like, we're going to have no hierarchy. So we don't have captains. Seniors aren't more important than freshmen. In fact, I ask more of our seniors than I do of our freshmen to set a good example. And hey, I want them to be looking at the court and being like, okay, those lines need to be fixed, those balls need to be collected, this needs to be done, and for them to get out there and do it and set a good example for our freshmen, instead of a program that I grew up in was like, hey, you're the freshman, you're wiping the floors and carrying coaches' golf bags, right? And so through that, not having any hierarchy, everyone can lead in their own way. And at the same time, everyone's got to have their own self-accountability and take care of their own job and learn
Right.
what it means to be a great teammate and how to give to the whole.
Right. That makes sense. I teach here at the University of Texas, and my specialty is leadership of self. And that's exactly what you're talking about. And I see that's the power of sports is coaches teach the athletes how to lead themselves, really. I mean, they got to lead themselves to put in the work to and embrace the process to get the results. And so, boy, I think you're right on. I'm sort of curious, what have you learned from Jarrett? What are like the two or three top things you learned from him?
The thing that I'm really curious and want to dive into is how much time and effort he puts into his athlete's career after they leave the University of Texas. Oftentimes we get so caught up in the day-to-day and the training and taking care of what's right in front of us that we don't have an opportunity to step back and look big picture and say, hey, what's our actual job here? Like, what are we actually doing here? We're here to develop young women in a time in their life where these experiences they're having can be very impactful for the rest of their life. And he's really honed into that and starts taking a look at, hey, what is it they want to do after athletics?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I haven't had the opportunity to do yet, but something that I'm real interested in learning more from him and following suit as soon as we can kind of get this ship up and running to a rinse and repeat
Right.
phase.
Right.
But I know, I think one of the reasons why I was really drawn towards Texas, and I think Jarrett was part of the process of hiring, why he was drawn to me, is we do have quite a few similarities in terms of how we approach our team and our culture when, built on relationships and really getting to understand each other, being empathetic towards each other and supporting our athletes and making sure that they're in the best possible, safest environment to really, find their best self.
Right. Yeah, I think so. And I think he's very innovative with and maybe more so proactive about helping athletes figure out what they're going to do in the real world. I mean, he was telling me that like he would bring in VRVO short-term rental experts to teach them about real estate. And I mean, who's doing that, right?
Yeah. I mean, those are the things that would have been so helpful, I know, for me as a college athlete, because when I left college, I had my PhD in volleyball and, I had a degree, but I didn't know how to survive in the real world. I had to learn on the job.
Right. So, I assume you have heard of Jarrett's five different types of leaders. He talks about there's the enforcer, the liaison, the go-to leader, the practice leader, and the challenging and changing things leader. Tell me your thoughts on that. Are you into that? Have you ever even heard it?
Well, I've heard it, and I've given it a little thought. I haven't sat down and meditated on it, but it's certainly interesting and something that's worth thinking about. I've never really thought of categorizing leadership styles, but it's something that would be interesting to chat with him about. I did hear about it when he had his interview with you.
Right. So you do a psychological profile of each player, right? And what's that called, and what does that tell you?
It's called the Enneagram, and
Is that
it
different than the Clifton StrengthFinders assessment? I
yeah
guess it
yes
is.
yes yeah it points to nine different personality styles, and everyone's a blend of these nine styles.
Right.
And then, you know, you answer a number of questions. Many of them seem very similar, and you can kind of answer them differently in different situations. So we actually found that my staff that I was with at the previous institution, we would take it in the mindset that we're coaches, and then when we were players, and it
Right.
would come out a little bit differently, which is really interesting. But you take these series of questions, and then it gives you an idea of like where your personality style is of these nine in the blend. And then it really speaks to, okay, what are your assets when you're at your best? And when you're not at your best and you're struggling, you kind of move across to some of these other characteristics that you have, and some of them are not quite as positive.
Right,
And it
right.
really pushes you to kind of, okay, you know, if I'm getting emotional or if I'm in a bad place, you know, I need to work on coming back to these characteristics that really serve me and serve the team. And so it's really interesting, introspective on yourself, and then it really gives you an opportunity to share with others. And that's why I think this one is really powerful for us, because we do have that partnership. You know, if
Yeah.
indoor six of you, and you got to know, you all got to get along and know each other, but there are buffers, right? Because there's more of you. When it's just
Yeah.
you and your one partner, it's a really intimate relationship there, and you really got to know the person well. And like I said, our game is all about somebody picking on your weaknesses.
Yeah.
So there are times where you're going to be struggling. There are times where you're going to be embarrassed and you can't get subbed out. You're just out there. You got to own it.
Right.
And so that relationship you have with the person right next to you is critical.
Right. So how do you teach a player how to win?
I lost you for a second there on the volume. Would you repeat the
So
question?
how do you teach a player how to win?
Well, one is in terms of the simple training of it. Our sport has a lot of split second decisions, very much like indoor, and so a lot of our drills are around this decision making process. Like you don't have much time to react, and you got to make quick decisions. And then it's really important to not be self-judgmental, because you're going to make some decisions that don't go well.
Right.
And so it's critical to reflect on that and be like, okay, if this situation comes around again, obviously I'm going to try it a different way.
So
So
learn
that,
from your mistakes, obviously.
yeah. And then in terms of the mental aspect, for me, a lot of it, what I notice about athletes today, and it's been surprising, not surprising, but it's pretty obvious and stark to me, is that they get into that fight or flight zone pretty quickly. And I think it has a lot to do with all the attention and the social media and everything, all the eyes that are on them. I remember as a player 20, 30 years ago, you didn't have that many eyes on you.
Right.
And so there's that, I think it's just like a fear of judgment and eyes and people on you all the time that really can get you close to and into that fight or flight. And so we do breathing exercises, and we try to pay attention to where we're going in terms of emotionally, and really try to keep ourselves calm and centered into a place where we can perform and we can make these quick decisions.
Right. You know, it's interesting that volleyball is a little like tennis. I used to be a tennis player, and I've been studying some of the people like Novak Djokovic and Maria Sharapova, and you know, they talk about like there's 25 seconds between points, not quite as many seconds between points in volleyball, right? But still, it's conquering those 25 seconds. And they were talking about how you have to let the thoughts come and let them go, and develop that basically through meditation, to let those thoughts come and go and not be judgmental on the thoughts. And that's largely how to sort of control the negative inner voice. You buy that? Does that make sense?
Absolutely, 100%. And in our sport, At the professional level, there are 14 seconds between plays.
Right, right.
And so the space between plays is critical. And something
right.
that athletes that come into college, that there's no, they don't have awareness of how important that time is. That's your time to reflect. And I try to tell them, like, hey, you got about 2 or 3 seconds to reflect on the last play. Think about how you might, what it might, how you might have done it differently. And then it's time to move on and reset for the next play.
Right.
And paying attention to where you are. And this is a conversation we have with the athletes. I say, there's one thing in common with all great athletes. One thing. And I say, what is that? They're like, oh, they're athletic or this or that. And I say, the one thing is that they pay attention.
Right.
So they pay attention to what's going on the court, their opponent, themselves, what's happening internally. And from there, once you start paying attention, then you can start coming with a plan or ideas on how you want to function, how you want to move forward. And of course, you're going to be wrong sometimes, but you're paying attention to that.
Right.
And you can reset and start it again. So in fact, Angie, my assistant, sent out a Novak quote this morning that had to deal with just that, you know,
right.
like feeling the emotion, paying attention to it, being aware, letting it kind of pass by like a cloud, and then being able to come back, reset, and be ready for that next point. So I 100% agree with that.
Right. You know, the other thing he talks about is the power of visualization in that, you know, meditation is sort of to quiet the mind, and visualization for him sort of energizes him so he can see himself hitting the shots that he wants to hit. And it's that combination of visualization with meditation that is sort of the ideal mindset for a tennis player, but it sounds like it might be similar for a volleyball player as well.
Oh, no question. And it's interesting that we spend, you know, most athletes spend so much time, and the way we grew up, you spend all your time on the physical side of the sport. And the mental side, you know, maybe you give 5% to, but it's so critical, especially as you get to higher and higher levels where everyone has similar athleticism and skill sets. It's the mental side that's critical, and I think it's especially important in our sport.
Right, right. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, Stein, because I remember back in high school, I was played competitive tennis, and I was so damn clueless about the mental side of the game. You know, like they had the algebra teacher as the coach. You know, well, there's no, you know, teaching about the mental side of the game. And you know, it's just interesting, just to the point that you're making, you know, it's so important. But back then, you know, we had no clue, you know, and, you know, I so wish that somebody would have taken me at that tender young age and said, you know, John, if you want to be great at tennis, you gotta put in the work. You know, you're not more naturally talented than the other people. It's whoever puts in the work, and the mental side of the game is going to be most of the game. And so I'm sort of curious, with your players, how do you get them to embrace putting in the work?
The mental work.
Right. Well, really both
the
physical and the mental work.
Well, I mean, initially we're setting standards, right? We know where we want to get to. We
right.
have a comfortable. And so it's just the day to day. Like I had mentioned before, I feel like I'm a practice coach. I love practice. I love getting in there in the trenches and working and developing. So it's about setting standards every day in practice and getting them to recognize like how critical that is. And once the game comes, we say, you know, you practice how you play, play how you practice. You want to have no change. You don't want to show up and be like, okay, I'm in the NCAA championship, I need to play 10% better.
Right.
In fact, you want to show up and be like, I just need to do me. If I
yeah.
can play par, I got a great chance of winning here. And so just setting that tone in terms of like how important practice is and putting in the work, I think is something that, I'm actually really happy with where we're at in terms of our athletes that we have now. We've got 12 that are here now. And I think they understand that. And part of that is they're real excited about legacy, about being the first ones here at Texas and wanting to prove themselves and prove that, you know, we're worthy and we're going to hold up our end of the bargain at Texas. And so they're ready to put in the work. We are doing some mindfulness meditation. It's hard to know who's giving it actual buy-in and who's
right.
still looking at it like, what is this? I'm not sure about this yet.
Right. Right.
But we'll continue to do it. It's just too darn important to ignore. So I guess the jury's still out in terms of like how much they're accepting it and buying in.
Yeah.
But they're there sitting there. So
right. Right.
We're on our way.
Well, you know, I mentioned the idea earlier in our conversation about leadership of self. I'm interested in what you do each day to impact your mindset in terms of your morning routine. To tell the coaches what you do for your morning routine.
For my morning routine?
Right.
Well, my morning routine is driving into campus and
right.
kind of just getting my mindset for practice and trying to be as I want to show up the same every day.
Right.
Which, you know, that's probably not my baseline in terms of day to day. And so being as consistent as possible as a coach when I show up to practice is critically important. And for me, it's about doing the work. It's about setting a standard, but there also needs to be joy in what
right.
we do.
And
so,
and like, do you get up early? Describe sort of how you get your day going.
Yeah. Well, I get up early. Yeah. We have morning practice. Get up early. I have my coffee. I get my son in the car. Drop them off at school, and then I have about 25 minutes to get centered before I get to practice.
Right.
So I'm not doing anything too special in terms of showing up, but just basically getting centered and making sure that I'm present.
Does that mean that you're meditating?
It's a yeah. I would call it kind of like a meditative time for me to get to practice and be like, where do I want to be and what are we going to do today at practice?
Right, right. And
but
how
in terms
do you...
of doing a sitting meditation, we do that with the team in the first 5 minutes.
Oh, I see. So your mindset work on yourself is really done with the team.
Yeah.
Primarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And so you start every practice with 5 minutes of meditation.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
That's newer for our team, but it's what we're doing currently.
Right. Do you incorporate visualization in the meditation, or is it just basically quiet the mind sort of meditation?
You know, the visualization that I've implemented with the team has to do with on the court.
Right.
That's kind of a pro tip gold nugget that I learned as a player. Was that when I was getting pursued by my opponent and a certain skill, is that I would take that space between and I would visualize myself from a third party, you know, seeing myself doing the actual skill and doing it well and then being ready for that next point.
Right.
Specifically
right.
in passing, because that first contact is so critical that when I would get attacked, I would actually think about this player that I idolized and how he would perform it and then visualize myself doing it in the same way. And it was extremely helpful for me.
Do you find that the players coming in have a lot of work to do on the mental side of the game? Is that more where they have to improve than the physical side?
I would say that it's a combination. You know,
right.
they're developmental athletes. They've got a ways to go. We've got a lot to teach them. And so I think it's twofold.
Right, right. I can see that. And talk about personal growth. You know, tell our fellow coaches sort of what you do to grow yourself on an ongoing basis.
Well, being being open to making mistakes and getting feedback from my athletes, to be honest. Like
Right.
some of my growth moments have been giving my athletes a safe space to give me feedback and give me an opportunity to be a better coach.
Right, right. Do you
go ahead.
Do you hold yourself to read a book a month, or what does that look for, like in terms of bringing the wisdom of experts into your head?
Yeah, mine is audiobooks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, if it comes to reading with all that's going on in a day to day and raising a family and building a program, if I start to read, I'll fall asleep. So what I've learned is audiobooks is critical for me.
You know, I tell you, I think you're right. And one of the things I've learned and that I teach my students is that to have effective personal growth, it's got to be consistent and it's got to be strategic relative to what you want to accomplish. And it also has to take no additional time out of your busy schedule, which causes it by its nature to be audio. And whether you're listening to podcasts or listening to a book, do you have a favorite couple of books that you've read that's influenced your life?
Well, I would say one that influenced that created the greatest change and had the greatest influence on me as a parent and then leading into being a coach was a book called Punished by Rewards by
Wow.
Alfie Kuhn. And it really resonated with me because of my experience as an athlete and things that I liked and things that I didn't like about being an athlete. It just connected and it made sense to me. And what it did is it made me realize that I don't like punishments and I don't like giving rewards. And being on teams and at the end of the year and having a banquet and having an MVP and a most this and a most that, I always felt like that was uncomfortable for me.
Right, right.
Whether I was winning it or I wasn't winning it.
Yeah.
And it created this sense of scarcity within a team when really there should be abundance if we're all on the same team and we're all cooperating and like what we're trying to create, not having any hierarchy, everyone's got value on a team and everyone needs to be at their best in order for us to be successful. Once we start giving out awards within the team, there is this sense of scarcity and
yeah.
competition within the team, which is we want to create cooperation. We want to, that's where the growth happens. And you know, the environment that I grew up playing in, it was not like that at all. It's very much about competition. It's very much about rewards. It's very much about competing within a group. And in this day and age, whether you're on our team or you're in a company, I think cooperation is a lot more powerful.
Right. Well, and you know, in the vein of personal growth, what are the things in you that you want to get better at? Have you identified what those might be?
Continuing to stay present on a daily basis and listening more.
Yeah. That's a good one for all of us.
Yeah. You know, on the one hand, I feel like I've done quite a bit of learning in terms of how to play the game of beach volleyball.
Right.
So I feel like I have a lot to offer. And sometimes I catch myself talking too much and trying to teach too much. And instead of giving them an opportunity to learn on their own and figure it out on their own.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I tell you, one of the things that has been challenging for me that maybe you'll find this interesting is, you know, I like you probably, I want to tell them, here's what I want you to know. But I see that telling them is almost counterproductive. It's better to ask them questions and make them discover whatever I want to share with them through questions. Have you ever tried that?
Yeah, absolutely. And Angie, actually, my assistant is excellent at that. So it's been great to have a new staff and learn from them. And I've been learning more from her about how to kind of stand back and pull it out of them. I think that's a big part of my growth in the last decade is I started out pushing.
Right.
And I continued to move the needle more and more towards pulling, like
right.
pulling them along with and pulling stuff out of them.
Right.
And I want to continue to do that. It's not my original nature, but certainly an area of growth that I've been working on.
Right. I just interviewed Howard Joffe, our tennis coach, who's a very enlightened guy, and he was telling me that earlier in his career, he would sort of force the opportunity onto his girls. You need to take it right now, and he'd be very frustrated if they didn't. But he says over the years, he's more like, well, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And if they're going to take the opportunity, they're going to take it. And if they're not, there's not a whole lot you can do with it. But that was his lesson of maturity over the years. You buy that? Is that you relate to
Absolutely.
that?
Absolutely. And that's why the relationship and trust are so important. Because
Right.
if you don't have buy-in with the athletes, it doesn't matter how much you know or how smart you know. There's not going to be any transfer of information or growth there.
Right. So as you do recruiting, what's basically your pitch to the recruits?
Come take a visit.
Right,
Come
right.
see Austin, come see Texas. It's a great place. And certainly, we're pitching culture, we're pitching our coaching staff. Texas is able to bring in a great coaching staff. Love my staff. And an opportunity to build a legacy from the ground up, a chance to be the trailblazers, the first
Right.
one to come through. Do you want to go to a place and be just another one in the line of people that have come through in the last decade, or do you want to be the ones who start and build and win the first championship here at Texas? And I think that resonates with a lot of the recruits we're talking to.
Right. Do you find that the city of Austin is a huge draw?
Yeah, no question. Yeah,
Right.
it was for us. In fact, I didn't come in from Hawaii and then living in Southern California and not taking too many trips to Texas. When we were coming over on the plane for our recruiting trip, my wife and I were expecting cactuses and tumbleweeds. And
Right.
we here in Austin, we're like, this city is amazing. Like, we've heard good things, but this is really great. And certainly something when we have visits, we take at least a half a day to adventure in Austin and show people what the city has to offer.
Right. Well, Austin is sort of like mini California with it, especially in the western part of Austin. It's hilly and all that. The rest of Texas, you may or may not know, is just flat as a pancake. Dallas is that way, Houston's that way, but Austin is the oasis of Texas, I think.
Yeah, we're enjoying it. We love it here, and it's gonna draw some athletes to the University of Texas, no question.
Right. Well, Stein, thank you for doing this. This is very good. I like I told you at the start, I was totally impressed with your background, and you're clearly the best in the business. So I'm glad you're here at the University of Texas, as I'm sure everybody else is.
Well, I appreciate that and appreciate your time and the interviews. Enlightening and an opportunity for me to learn too from you. I've written down a couple of notes down here from things, and look forward to listening to more podcasts as you interview other coaches.
Hey, coaches, I hope you found that interesting. So let me give you the top three takeaways from this interview. Here's the first one. Why did the University of Texas create beach volleyball? Well, for us, hey, it was just a natural fit. For the last 2 years, we've won the NCAA volleyball championship. Jarrett is building a volleyball dynasty here at the University of Texas. But there was also a need at UT for more women's sports, so evolving into beach volleyball was just a natural fit, with the belief that we could be successful right away by leveraging our success in regular volleyball. Today, there are over 60 schools around the country that are competing in beach volleyball in this 10-year-old sport at the NCAA level. Here's the second takeaway. Stein Metzger, our coach, has already won two national championships at UCLA. Going out and getting the best is just what we do here at the University of Texas, and we certainly did this in the hiring of Stein. And here's the third takeaway. In beach volleyball, the key is mastering mentally the 20 seconds between points. And you know, it's very similar to the challenge tennis players face. How players handle the 20 seconds between points, the reset, is the key to the success they have in the sport. They gotta have that next play mentality. But they also have to learn from what just happened, both good and bad. Stein wants his players to be self-aware regarding what's going on with them, as well as what's going on with their opponent. Paying attention is the key. To facilitate having the right mental attitude, each team practice starts with 5 minutes of meditation. And Stein says that most programs only spend about 5% of their time on the mental side of the game. Stein's spending way more with his team. And here's the action step for this week. Stein is using the Enneagram personality test. And this test identifies nine different personality types. And here's what's interesting about it. It tells you where you tend to go from a personality standpoint when you're under stress. That self-awareness for a player can be immensely valuable. What do you think about that for your team? Stein is all about helping his athletes be the best version of themselves. Maybe this type of personality test would be helpful for your team. Something to consider. Until next time, hook 'em.